Welcome back, everybody, for another deep dive.
Yeah.
Today we're going to be talking about companion planting,
Awesome.
specifically companion planting with native species.
Right.
So kind of taking it to the next level.
Yes.
And we're going to be basing this deep dive on a presentation by environmental scientist and native plant expert, Eric Fusilier.
Okay, cool.
So he really knows his stuff.
Sounds like it.
Yeah, so we're excited to dive into this and kind of see what kind of gems we can pull out. So yeah, companion planting.
I mean, it's a great idea.
It is. I mean, it's so beneficial. You
Yeah.
know, it's attracting beneficial insects, attracting pollinators. It's helping with pest control.
Right,
You know,
right.
you're really working with nature
Absolutely.
and not against it, which is how it should be.
Exactly.
So Eric, in this presentation, he kind of dives deep into specific pairings
Okay.
of native plants and, like, you know, the vegetable or fruit crops that they benefit.
I like it.
So we're going to kind of go through those.
Okay.
And start with one of my favorites, dogberries.
Yeah.
So, you know, we all know pollinators are key,
Crucial.
crucial, yes.
For sure.
But one thing I found really interesting that I hadn't really thought of before is that different crops attract different types of bees.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So it's not just like a general bee
No,
thing.
like I always thought they were just like
Right, like any bee will do.
any bee will do, but
Yeah.
it's like there's actually a strategy to this.
There's a method to the madness.
Yeah.
Okay.
So strawberries, he says, are primarily pollinated by medium-sized bees.
Okay.
And one thing that he points out is that strawberries themselves don't offer a ton of nectar and pollen.
Huh, I didn't know that.
I know. I always just assumed that, like,
Yeah.
that's how they got pollinated. They just go to the strawberry flower,
Yeah, me too.
get all the nectar and pollen they need,
Yeah, and they're happy.
and they're happy.
But apparently not.
Apparently not. So that's where the
Bruh.
companion planting comes in. So he says, like, a plant like golden ragwort, which
Yeah.
is just, you know, a common wildflower
Yeah.
that offers a lot more nectar and pollen.
Okay.
So by planting that nearby,
Right.
it's going to attract those medium-sized bees.
Gotcha. So it's like you're making this little habitat
You're making a habitat.
that is like more appealing, and then you're going to
Yeah.
get better pollination for your strawberries.
Exactly.
You can.
So they're more likely to be like, oh, this is a good spot.
I like this area.
Got to hang out here,
Yeah.
pollinate your
This is
strawberries.
a good place to be.
Exactly.
Nice.
Another thing he points out
Yeah.
is that there are some plants that benefit multiple crops.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So wild hyacinth
Okay.
seems to be like a real superstar.
Oh, cool.
It attracts pollinators for strawberries, raspberries, and blueberries.
So you can plant that in a few different spots.
Yeah, you can kind of put it like centrally
Gotcha.
and get like triple duty out of it.
Triple duty.
I love it.
I know, it's great.
That's great for people who have smaller gardens too.
Exactly.
Yeah. If you're limited on space.
You can maximize it.
Yes.
Okay, wild hyacinth.
Okay, so then let's talk about blackberries and raspberries.
Right.
So they attract a wider range of bee sizes.
All
So
right.
in this case, he's saying diversity in your companion plants is even more important.
Okay.
So you want to be attracting all those different.
Little buffet.
Yes, a buffet, a bee buffet.
Okay.
So he highlighted a few natives. Jacob's Ladder with its really delicate blue flowers, and then New Jersey tea,
Oh,
which
well,
has the added bonus of being usable for tea.
so double duty.
Double duty.
Right.
And then Baptisias, which come in a variety of colors. So
Oh.
lots of options there.
Yeah.
And then on to blueberries. He recommends spotted bee balm,
Of course.
of course, because it's called bee balm.
Yep.
And then he mentions wood betony, which is a plant with delicate white flowers that he says is a personal favorite of his.
Oh, cool.
So I like that he's kind of sharing his personal favorites.
Yeah, little insider
Yeah.
tips.
Okay, tomatoes, a garden favorite.
Yeah.
He points out that tall coreopsis, an obedient plant, are good for like sunny gardens,
Okay.
and then lead plant is good for a shadier spot.
All right, so you got
You
options
have options.
depending on what you're working with.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then peppers.
Peppers.
He highlights foxglove beard tongue, which
Yeah.
I know it has like the weirdest name,
What is that?
but it apparently has a hairy stamen, which gives it the beard part of its name.
Oh, interesting.
I know. So I'm really curious to see what that one looks like.
I've never heard of that one.
Me neither.
Okay.
Green beans.
Green beans.
He mentions common milkweed,
Of course.
which we all know is
Yeah.
good for the monarchs, but he says its benefits go way beyond the butterflies.
Yeah, but.
And last but not least,
Right.
squash, zucchini, and melons. And you know, I always dread the squash bugs.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm like, what can I do?
Is there a
Yeah,
solution?
like give me the solutions.
Yeah.
So he emphasizes the essential role of squash bees,
okay,
which are specialized pollinators for those crops.
Right.
And common sunflowers are a great companion plant.
Those are good for everything, it seems. They're so cheerful.
They are.
Okay.
So it's kind of bringing it back to the natives, you know, because sunflowers are native too.
Yeah.
We forget sometimes.
That's true.
Okay, we've covered
quite a few. Yeah.
So I kind of want to pause here for a second and think about the bigger picture.
Yeah.
Like, what does all this talk about native plants and attracting pollinators really mean for us gardeners?
Yeah. Why should we care?
Why should we care?
Yeah. I think it's about recognizing that our gardens are part of a larger ecosystem.
Yeah.
You know, like we're not just creating this like isolated little bubble.
Right.
We're actually creating, you know.
All connected.
It's all connected. And by choosing native plants, we're creating a more diverse and resilient habitat, not just for pollinators.
Right.
But for a whole web of beneficial insects, birds, and other wildlife.
Yeah, so it's like we're kind of zooming out a little bit and thinking about the bigger picture.
Yeah.
It's not just about like my tomatoes.
Exactly.
It's about like the whole ecosystem.
Right, and ultimately a healthier ecosystem leads to a healthier garden.
Yeah.
Right.
Less pest pressure, better pollination, hopefully a more abundant harvest.
Exactly. So are you ready to meet some of the unsung heroes of the garden?
Oh, yeah.
The beneficial insects that act as natural pest control.
Bring on the beneficial bugs.
Okay, all right.
Ready.
So for this part of the deep dive, we're turning to another expert, Heather Holm.
Okay.
She's a biologist and author who's done extensive research on beneficial insects and their role in pest control.
Awesome.
So she's basically the ultimate bug whisperer.
Love it.
All right. So before we dive into the specifics, let's quickly acknowledge the enemy.
Okay.
Those pesky garden pests that we all love to hate.
Right. Aphids, leafhoppers, thrips.
Mm-hmm. Cabbage worms.
Yeah. All of them.
And the list goes on and on.
Just so many.
But here's the good news. There's a whole army of beneficial insects out there.
Okay.
Ready to combat these villains.
I like it. Nature has our back.
Nature has its own solutions, and they're often far more effective
and
sustainable than anything we can buy in a bottle.
I'm all about that.
Okay, good.
So give me the rundown. Like, which beneficial insects should I be looking to recruit for my garden?
Okay. Well, leading the charge are the green lacewings.
Okay.
These guys are voracious predators, and their larvae feed on a wide variety of soft-bodied insects, including aphids, mealybugs, and even small caterpillars.
So they're like little ninjas.
They're like tiny ninjas taking down those pests
before
they can do too much damage.
I love it.
All right, so how can we attract these lacewings to our gardens?
Tell me.
Yarrow is the key. It's a favorite nectar source for adult lacewings. And they often lay their eggs on the plant.
Oh, wow.
Ensuring a new generation of pest control agents is ready to go.
That is amazing.
So, yeah, yarrow, definitely a must-have.
Yarrow noted.
Okay, but wait, there's more.
Oh, there's always more.
Let's talk about syrphid flies.
Syrphid flies, okay.
These are also aphid-eating machines.
Awesome.
But they have fascinating dual life cycle.
Dual life cycle.
Yes.
I'm intrigued.
So, as adults,
they're
these beautiful hovering pollinators
that
resemble bees or wasps.
Interesting.
But their larvae are these legless little creatures that patrol the undersides of leaves, devouring aphids with gusto.
That's impressive.
Yeah. So what plants can we offer to entice these syrphid flies to our gardens?
Tell me.
Believe it or not, even something as humble as daisy fleabane, which many consider a weed, can attract them.
Wow.
It just goes to show that what we might see as a nuisance can actually play a valuable role in the ecosystem.
You're changing my whole perspective on weeds.
Good. That's what I like to hear.
I know.
All right, let's move on to the tachinid flies.
Tachinid flies, okay.
These guys are a little more hardcore.
Oh, boy.
They're parasitic wasps.
Parasitic. Okay, I'm a little squeamish, so break it down for me.
Okay. Don't worry. It's not as scary as it sounds.
Right.
Tachinid flies lay their eggs on or in other insects, specifically those we consider pests.
Okay.
Like squash bugs or caterpillars. And then their larvae develop inside the host, essentially using it as a living meal.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Eventually the host dies.
Wow.
And new tachinid flies emerge.
That is hardcore.
Ready to continue the cycle of pest control.
So they're like tiny assassins?
They are tiny assassins fighting the bad bugs from the inside out.
Wow. Nature is amazing.
It is. So one of the best ways to attract these tachinid flies is to plant common boneset.
Common bone set. Okay.
Yeah, it's a versatile plant that provides nectar for adults and attracts a wide range of beneficial insects, including these parasitic wasps.
Okay, so common bone set, check.
All right, are you sensing a theme here?
I'm sensing a lot of native plants.
That's the beauty of it.
Yeah.
By creating a habitat that supports native plants,
yeah,
we're naturally inviting the insects,
right,
that have co-evolved with them.
Yeah.
The ones that help maintain balance,
mm-hmm,
in the ecosystem.
Makes sense.
Speaking of balance, let's talk about soldier beetles.
Soldier beetles. Okay, I like the name already.
I know, it's a good one.
What's their superpower?
They're aphid-eating machines, like some of the others we've mentioned.
Okay.
But they're also known to feed on grasshopper eggs and small caterpillars.
Oh, nice. So they're like the cleanup crew.
Yeah, they're like the cleanup crew taking care of any leftover pests that the lacewings and surfeit flies might have missed.
Right.
And goldenrods are a magnet for soldier beetles.
Goldenrods. Okay.
In fact, you often see a wave of ladybugs and soldier beetles.
Wow.
Following an aphid infestation on goldenrods.
So it's like nature's own...
It's like nature's own pest control cycle.
Pest control cycle in action. I love it.
All right, let's talk about thread-waisted wasps.
Thread-waisted wasps.
These are fascinating creatures that actually mimic bees.
Wait, so they look like bees, but they're actually wasps.
Yes.
That feels a little deceptive.
Well, it's a clever evolutionary strategy.
Okay.
That allows them to blend in and avoid predators.
Smart.
But unlike bees, they're primarily predators, and they have a taste for caterpillars.
For caterpillars. Okay, I know caterpillars turn into beautiful butterflies.
I know.
So it feels a little conflicting to, like, encourage something that eats them.
It's all about balance, right?
Right.
Supporting butterflies is important.
Yeah.
But we also need to support the natural predators, mm-hmm, that keep their populations in check.
Makes sense.
It's all part of a healthy ecosystem.
Right. We can't just focus on one species.
Yeah.
It's about fostering diversity and understanding the complex web of relationships that make up a thriving ecosystem.
Yeah.
Okay. So how do we attract these thread-waisted wasps? Any specific plants?
A variety of plants can attract them.
Okay.
Including many of the ones we've already mentioned, like common yarrow, rattlesnake master,
mm-hmm,
and wild quinine.
Okay.
They're not too picky, as long as there are plenty of caterpillars around for them to hunt.
All right, so we're seeing some common themes here.
Yes.
Yarrow, boneset, goldenrod.
Mm-hmm.
These are like the all-star team of beneficial insect attraction.
We are the MVPs,
yes,
of the garden.
Okay, so anything else?
Well, if you're looking for a plant that can handle a bit of shade,
okay,
New Jersey tea is another great option.
Oh, yeah.
And here's a fun fact.
Okay.
It attracts a wide variety of beneficial insects,
mm-hmm,
including the next one on our list.
Okay.
Paper wasps.
Paper wasps. Okay.
Right.
I'm going to be honest. Paper wasps kind of freak me out.
I get it. They can be intimidating.
Yeah.
But it's important to remember that they play a crucial role,
mm-hmm,
in the ecosystem. They're actually very effective at controlling pests like beetle larvae and caterpillars. And they also pollinate flowers.
So they're on our side.
They're on our side.
Even if they're a little scary looking.
Even if they're a little scary looking.
Okay.
Is there a way to coexist peacefully with them?
I'm open to it. Yeah, tell me.
Okay, absolutely.
Okay.
The key is to be aware of their nests,
mm-hmm,
and avoid disturbing them.
Okay.
If you see a nest in an area that's not causing any problems, just leave it be. They'll do their thing, and you'll benefit from their pest control services.
All right, I'm willing to give them a chance.
Good. I'm glad to hear it.
What about attracting them to the garden? Any specific plants?
You guessed it.
Oh, come on.
Common.
Yarrow.
Yarrow again.
Rattlesnake mat.
New Jersey tea and gray-headed coneflower.
Okay, so it seems like creating a haven for beneficial insects is all about planting the right native plants.
It is.
It's like inviting nature to become our gardening partner. And it's a partnership that benefits both us and the local ecosystem, right?
Right. It's a win-win for everybody.
So thinking back to all the plants we've talked about today, I'm kind of curious.
Yeah.
What stands out to you? I'm starting to realize that some of these native plants are like the MVPs of companion planting.
Yeah.
Yarrow, for example,
yeah,
seems to attract almost every beneficial insect we've discussed.
Yeah, it's true. Yarrow is a real workhorse when it comes to attracting beneficial insects.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also incredibly versatile and adaptable, you know,
mm-hmm,
growing well in a variety of conditions.
It's like the Swiss Army knife of companion planting.
Yeah, it is.
And I'm also really intrigued by common boneset.
Yeah.
I've never actually grown it before.
Okay.
But it sounds like it's worth adding to my garden.
Definitely. Common boneset is another one of those plants that attracts a wide range of beneficial insects.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a beautiful plant with these clusters of tiny white flowers that bloom late in the summer, providing nectar when many other plants have finished flowering.
So it's not JC good for the bugs. No. It's good for the gardener's eye, too.
Exactly.
And speaking of attracting beneficial insects,
yeah.
I'm feeling a lot less intimidated by paper wasps now.
Oh, good.
I'm actually starting to see them as allies in the garden.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that it's all about changing our perspective and recognizing the important roles that these insects play. You know,
right.
They might not be the cuddliest creatures, but they're certainly effective at keeping pest populations in check.
Okay, before we wrap up this deep dive, I want to make sure our listeners have some actionable takeaways.
Okay, good.
If they're feeling inspired to start incorporating native plants into their gardens, where should they begin?
Well, first of all, I would recommend checking out the resources that we've mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Heather Holmes' book, Pollinators of Native Plants, is a fantastic guide to attracting beneficial insects.
Right.
And the Sorsese Society's book, Farming with Native Beneficial Insects, provides even more in-depth information on ecological pest control.
Those are definitely going on my reading list. But beyond reading, what are some practical steps our listeners can take?
Well, start by observing your own WN garden. You know, what pests are you dealing with? Yeah. What vegetables do you want to focus on?
Mm-hmm.
And research which native plants attract the beneficial insects that target those pests or pollinate those crops.
Okay.
Remember, it's all about matching the plant to the insect.
Yeah.
And creating a balanced ecosystem.
And don't be afraid to experiment.
Oh, no, absolutely.
Gardening is a journey of learning and discovery, right?
Yes, absolutely. And there's no better way to learn than by getting your hands dirty and trying things out.
Mm-hmm.
You might be surprised by the diversity of life that you can attract to your garden just by making a few simple changes.
Yeah. And remember, even a small garden can make a difference.
Right.
Every native plant you add is a step towards supporting biodiversity and creating a healthier ecosystem. It's a win-win for your garden, for the local environment, and for the planet as a whole.
For sure.
So
yeah.
What native plant are you thinking of adding to your garden first?
That's a tough one. I'm tempted by that wild hyacinth.
Yeah.
For its versatility.
Yeah.
But I also need to get some yarrow in there.
Right.
To attract those lace wings.
Decisions. I think you need both.
You're probably right. Maybe some common boneset too.
Yeah.
Just to round things out.
Why not?
Well, it looks like I have some plant shopping to do.
Happy planting.
Thanks.
And remember to share your experiences. Mm-hmm. We love to hear how our listeners are putting these ideas into practice.
Yes.
And creating their own backyard havens for biodiversity.
That's all the time we have for today's deep dive. We hope you enjoyed this exploration of companion planting with native species.
Yeah.
And that you're feeling inspired to create a garden that's not only productive, but also ecologically sound.
For sure.
Thanks for joining us and happy gardening.